Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's capital braces for a tidal wave of students and others demanding action after last week's Broward County school shooting.
This is about creating a badge of shame to put on anybody who is accepting money from the NRA.
Also tonight, as those school shooting survivors prepare to trek to Tallahassee, some lawmakers are labeling their gun control ideas as naive.
To be preoccupied with that, I make it analogous to we need to fight obesity. It's killing people. But we don't go around and take up all the forks and spoons. That's not the answer. It's changing this behavior.
We'll also hear about a bill that would raise to 21 the minimum age to buy tobacco products in Florida and find out which bills from the 2018 session are the first to make it to Governor Scott's desk. It's the beginning of week 7 in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Just days after the massacre that left 17 of their classmates and teachers dead, student survivors of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting have become prominent gun control activists. From member station WLRN Miami, Jessica Bakeman introduces us to the grief-stricken young people who are determined to lead where they say politicians have not.
They're angry.
You are responsible. You are responsible.
They're channeling their pain and stepping into the harsh spotlight of a heated and ongoing national debate. They're the survivors of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting and the founders of a movement they're calling Never Again.
We are going to be the kids that you read about in textbooks. Not because we are going to be another statistic about mass shootings in America, but because we are going to be the last mass shooting.
That was Stoneman Douglas Sr. Emma Gonzalez at a rally on Saturday, reading a speech she wrote on the back of her AP government notes. She spoke in front of hundreds of people who crowded into the courtyard of the federal courthouse in Fort Lauderdale. The kids waved signs that said, "My friends died for what?" and "Money killed my friends." Here's Senior Delaney Tarr.
My innocence, our innocence, has been taken from us. I am 17, but in a matter of days, I have aged decades.
These students grew up preparing for violence in their schools with active shooter drills and witnessing violence in graphic detail on social media. Now, many of them are on the cusp of voting for the first time, and they're unambiguous about who they blame for the nation's deadliest high school shooting, the National Rifle Association, and politicians who take money from the gun lobby. Cameron Kasky is 17, a junior.
This is about creating a badge of shame to put on anybody who is accepting money from the NRA.
They listed the policy changes they want: a ban on assault weapons, stricter background checks, and a minimum age for gun purchases, and laws that keep guns away from unstable people who want to use them to kill. They also listed the politicians they believe are getting in the way. Florida's junior senator, Marco Rubio.
Oh, yeah.
They chanted, "Rubio must go." At the mention of Governor Rick Scott, who's expected to run for Senate this year, they booed. And of Republican state lawmakers in Tallahassee,
"Vote them out! Vote them out!"
"Vote them out," they chanted. A spokeswoman for Scott said he plans to meet with legislators this week to have a, quote, "real conversation" about potential changes, including policies to prevent mentally ill people from getting guns. And Rubio tweeted late Saturday he supports instituting a, quote, "better background check process." The teens will bring their message to him in Washington soon. They announced Sunday they're planning a rally in D.C. on March 24th, with simultaneous protests nationwide, like the women's marches that have brought out millions. They're calling it a March for Our Lives, and inviting students from all over the country to participate.
And if they can't make the trip, then to do it in their own city, in every major city across the country.
Chris Grady is 19 and a senior at Stoneman Douglas.
We demand to have our voices heard, and we're not gonna stop until the politicians in DC hear us.
Not everyone from Stoneman Douglas is strong enough to speak out yet, but
Sophie Whitney is another senior.
Me and my friends, we started this movement to make sure it never happens again.
Right now, these students have a captive audience.
We have to be studying our notes to make sure that our arguments are watertight.
In this speech that went viral over the weekend, Emma Gonzalez said she and her peers have been debating what to do about guns for what feels like their entire lives.
Some discussions on the subject even occurred during the shooting while students were hiding in the closets.
But she said, this is the first time anyone has listened. I'm Jessica Bakeman in Fort Lauderdale.
What kind of reception might those students find when they arrive in Tallahassee? One hopeful sign from their viewpoint is that their visit comes just as an NRA-backed bill was withdrawn from consideration. But as Sasha Cordner reports, some may see the students' gun control views as naive.
On Tuesday, Senate Judiciary Committee's agenda is a bill that would allow school principals and superintendents to designate certain people have firearms on school property. That could include veterans, law enforcement, or volunteers with concealed weapons permits.
It would only be people who are screened, people who are trained. Many of them are combat veterans that came back and been making a career in education, and many of them are responsible for the security and safety of these students, and yet they are powerless to act.
Baxley says his goal is very simple. He wants to focus on the first 5 minutes of a shooting. In the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, the massacre that left 17 people dead and more than a dozen injured took 3 to 6 minutes.
They may be crazy, but they're not stupid, and they realize there's no one there, armed resistance, that can deal with them. And so what happens in that first 5 minutes could make the difference of whether we have an incident or whether it turns into a massacre.
Opponents during the bill's first committee hearing in the House raised questions about how well-trained the designated person would be in an active shooter scenario and if mental health screenings would take place. But that debate won't be in the Senate anytime soon, since Baxley says he's now withdrawing his bill from consideration.
The chairman of the Judiciary Committee and I have concurred and agree that the best thing is for us to pull it off of the agenda at this point. We're not ready for this discussion.
100 Parkland students are expected to arrive in Tallahassee Tuesday and speak to lawmakers Wednesday about the need for gun control legislation. They likely would have opposed Baxley's bill backed by the NRA. Baxley says he's willing to meet with any of these students.
Always. I think it is part of working through our grief, and theirs is particularly intense. But I also think it's naive of them to think that we're going to solve this problem by eliminating one weapon or constraining weapons. They'll just choose other instruments. That's the history of this.
But Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book disagrees with Baxley's assessment. She helped coordinate the efforts to bring the students to Tallahassee.
And I walked around that school. I looked in the windows of those classrooms. And I don't think it's naive to think that if these children are calling for what they're calling for, that that's going to stop all of these problems. They have been through things that we'll never have to experience.
As for the trip to Tallahassee, Book says she spoke to 11th grade class president Jacqueline Corrin about making that happen.
And I started talking with her about what she needed to heal and what she felt was important to do. And she told me she wanted to come to Tallahassee with 100 of her friends who also have, you know, seen things that none of us can even imagine, and wanted to work to bring about change and share their stories in Tallahassee.
When the students arrive Tuesday night, they're expected to sleep at the Civic Center in Tallahassee. Book says she'll be joining them. Then in the morning, they already have meetings scheduled with Attorney General Pam Bondi, the Senate President and House Speaker, as well as lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. Book says there's a lot to talk about so they can prevent what happened at Douglas High School.
Does that include an assault weapons ban? Yes. Does that include mental health services and mental health funding? Yes. Does that include background checks, raising the age to purchase an assault weapon if we're not working on an all-out ban? Yes. When I sat across in a hospital bed from a young man whose foot was shot and very badly injured, all he could ask for was to raise the age of which a person can purchase an assault weapon. These are things that we all have to listen to.
So far, Senate President-designate Bill Galvano says he's preparing a comprehensive package of legislation that includes new age restrictions for gun purchases and a ban on bump stocks, which can allow a semi-automatic weapon to fire like an automatic weapon with the pull of a single trigger. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Governor Rick Scott is convening a series of workshops tomorrow to address the school shooting issue.
Our primary goal, as I bring everybody together, is to say these kids are going to be safe.
An expanded school voucher bill continues to work its way through the legislature, much to the dismay of its critics.
Proponents of this approach won't be satisfied until our education system has been entirely privatized.
And one of three bills awaiting Governor Rick Scott's lawmaking signature protects special needs children's right to a legal representative by financially supporting the pro bono lawyers that represent them.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
Just a few hours after last Wednesday's tragedy at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High, Governor Rick Scott joined other officials such as Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi and Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel outside the stricken school.
The first thing you think about is, you know, God, I hope this never happens to my family. Then you think about, you're furious. How could this ever happen in this country? How could this happen in this state? This is a state that is focused on keeping all of our children safe. You come to the conclusion this is just absolutely pure evil.
In less than 24 hours, Governor Scott was on the phone telling CNN's Wolf Blitzer that the evil of which he spoke might have many dimensions, none of which would be, in his words, off the table for state government to address.
We are going to look at all these things to figure out, what works and is not working. Our primary goal, as I bring everybody together, is to say these kids are going to be safe.
That was before the revelation that warnings about the suspected shooter, 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz, had been made to local law enforcement, the Florida Department of Children and Families, and the FBI. Governor Scott immediately called for the resignation of FBI Director Christopher Wray because his agency dropped the ball. Then today, Scott called on the Bureau to release all details about how the warnings about Cruz never made it to the agents at the FBI's Miami field office who could have further investigated the case. Also today, Governor Scott fleshed out what he had told Wolf Blitzer about calling a lot of people together to consider the issue.
I'm going to get people from all over the state. I'm going to get, individuals to sit down to figure out how to get this done. I've already talked to my Speaker of the House. My Senate President said we have got to get something done. They said they're going to be very supportive of working with me to get something done in the state.
Most of that something will take place tomorrow in a series of Tallahassee meetings that will be open to the media but not the public. The separate workshops will involve education officials at the Florida Department of Education. Child welfare advocates and behavioral health leaders will hold their day-long workshop at the Florida Department of Children and Families headquarters. There will also be a gathering of law enforcement personnel at the Florida Sheriff's Association headquarters. After these workshops are done, Governor Scott will host a roundtable in his large conference room at the Capitol, which will involve the leaders from each workshop group. In announcing the workshop schedule and participants, the governor said he hoped the meetings would result in better school safety, improved mental health treatment, and even better gun policies. Although time's running out for this year's lawmaking session, a number of controversial bills are still being debated. As we hear from Kathy Carter from member station WUSF in Tampa, one expands school voucher programs.
A bill passed by the House and working its way through the Senate would create the first of its kind school voucher program in the country. It would allow kids who are bullied in public schools to obtain state vouchers to offset tuition at a private school. House Speaker Richard Corcoran is one of the most vocal proponents of school vouchers in the legislature and is a big proponent of the HOPE scholarship.
Those children are forced day in and day out to go back to that school where they're subject to violence and abuse. And what we have learned, where there is intimidation and violence and abuse, that child's learning pretty much ceases to exist.
The program would be paid for by taxpayers who voluntarily designate a portion of fees associated with car purchases in return for a tax credit. The plan derives its name from a law passed last year. Schools of HOPE set aside $140 million of public money to subsidize charter schools that open within a five-mile radius of a low-performing public school.
And that's why we call them HOPE scholarships. That's why we call it Schools of HOPE. Because what you're finally giving that child is hope that, yes, they can go out there and have their slice of the American dream.
But as the bill's opponents point out, there are already laws that address school bullying. Florida law even ties school district funding to compliance of state policies. That's why some lawmakers, like Democratic Representative Loren Osley, says the HOPE scholarship is really a thinly veiled attempt at a greater push for charter school expansion in Florida.
I'm not the first person to suggest that proponents of this approach won't be satisfied until our education system has been entirely privatized.
And as she and others have noted, the HOPE scholarship does nothing to address the root cause of bullying.
I have an idea. Why don't we take these resources and put them into existing anti-bullying programs that can support all of our kids in every single public school?
Florida has one of the largest school choice programs in the country. It's called the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program. It's paid for by an income tax credit for corporations. Last year, close to 107,000 students were awarded scholarships throughout the state. And under a new proposal in the Florida House, part of a larger tax package could generate $150 million in sales tax to the state's voucher programs. Sue Legg is a professor at the University of Florida and a member of the Florida League of Women Voters education team. She says it's tough to blame parents who leave public schools for the hope of something better. But
when you take that same pot of money for education in Florida and you divide it among charters and tax credit scholarship private schools and public schools, no one sector has enough to do the job well.
And she says private schools don't have the same accountability requirements as public schools. Special needs students who use vouchers lose most of the protections of the federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. If a bullied public school student were to use a voucher to go to private school, they may not be aware those schools are not legally required to have anti-harassment policies.
This is something that the public really needs to tune into because parents don't have sufficient information to make good choices.
Evidence that vouchers produce significant learning gains are mixed. A 2017 study by the Urban Institute found voucher students in Florida were 15% more likely to enroll in state colleges than their public school peers. The program has since tripled, and the author of that study now says there is little evidence on how the program has evolved. But there is one thing people on both sides of the voucher debate can agree on. Policies enacted now will have an effect on Florida students for many years to come. I'm Kathy Carter in Tampa.
Would raising the age to buy tobacco products lower the cost of health care in Florida? One lawmaker thinks it might, and we get that story from Regan McCarthy.
Katie Flynn started smoking when she was just 16.
It was very cool at that time, and I was a cool kid, so I started smoking.
Then in 1998, Flynn was diagnosed with cancer.
I got a head and neck cancer. It metastasized to my lymph nodes. They gave me 20% chance to live. I fought it with everything I had. I spent weeks in the hospital. I had radiation. I had surgery.
Flynn says she beat the odds to survive and wants to do whatever she can to protect young people from living through that same experience. She supports a measure filed by Longwood Republican Senator David Simmons that would require a person to be at least 21 before they can purchase tobacco products. Simmons thinks his plan will reduce the number of people who start smoking to begin with.
95% of adult smokers begin smoking before they turn 21, and many smokers transition to regular use during the ages of 18 to 21.
And Matt Jordan with the American Cancer Society says increasing the age requirement will limit access to tobacco for young people.
People who are under 18 who are smoking, they're getting their cigarettes or their other forms of tobacco from their friends, their family members, etc. 64% of middle schoolers are getting their tobacco from a social source, and 55% of high schoolers are getting their tobacco from a social source. So what that means is if we can extend this to 21, you're not going to see a 21-year-old in high school. So you really then broaden that gap where you're taking out a huge area for middle schoolers and high schoolers and taking their access away.
But Simmons is anticipating a fight. When it comes to smoking, Simmons says many people consider it to be a right. But he argues that right should stop as soon as it begins to cause public harm.
Then you have to look at it from the view of weighing the risks against the benefits and the burden on the rest of society by virtue of paying for those health care risks.
Simmons says there's already precedent. For example, the state requires people to wear seat belts. And he says health care costs are taking over the state's budget.
The point of it is that once viewed in the proper perspective, particularly of the literally exorbitant costs of health care that burden not only those individuals who smoke, but those who have to pay for the person who smokes, if we're going to ever address the issue of rising health care costs, which are literally in many instances bankrupting our budget, then we need to say, how are we going to solve that problem? And the answer is that this is one way of doing it.
Simmons' bill would also expand the definition of tobacco products, a move Jordan with the American Cancer Society says will go even further to help stop the use of tobacco among young people.
And that allows things like Tobacco Free Florida and other cessation programs and preventable programs and education programs to then focus on e-cigarettes, which is very rapidly growing here in our youth here in Florida.
But Mario Norris with the Florida Smoke-Free Association, a group that promotes vaping, argues e-cigarettes should not be included in the tobacco definition. He points out even some vegetables contain trace amounts of nicotine.
So essentially a salad is a nicotine delivery device that should be classified the same way.
And Norris is worried the bill could cause vaping stores to go out of business. Simmons workshopped his bill in the Senate Regulated Industries Committee, but doesn't expect the measure to move forward during this legislative session. He's hoping committee members will help him push for a study this summer that could look into the impact tobacco use has on the state's medical costs. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, in lawmaking, as in hydrology, a trickle usually precedes a flood. The very first bills of the 2018 legislative session are now heading to Governor Rick Scott's office this week, the final step before becoming law. Andrew Quintana reports.
Senate Bill 220 streamlines the process of foreclosing a debtor's property by using evidence from their bankruptcy case. The bill's sponsor, Senator Kathleen Passidomo, says this will address a problematic loophole.
This bill closes the loophole whereby a debtor in a federal bankruptcy proceeding agrees to surrender real property but then reneges on that agreement in a foreclosure proceeding in state court.
Currently, any evidence a debtor uses in their bankruptcy case does not automatically transfer over to a foreclosure case. This bill allows certain documents from an individual's federal bankruptcy proceedings to be used as evidence in a state foreclosure case against them. the documents must prove that the individual fully intends to relinquish their property and will follow through. Meanwhile, Senator Aaron Bean wants to ensure children get an attorney by financially backing pro bono lawyers. In 2014, the legislature determined dependent children with special needs are entitled to have constant legal representation throughout their dependency cases, which ultimately provides them with the services and health care they need. In order to save money, the state allowed these children to be represented by pro bono attorneys. These attorneys are not compensated for their work and pay due process costs out of their own pockets. Due process costs cover court reporting and transcripts, witnesses, mental health professionals, and certain travel expenses. Bean's measure requires the state to cover all due process costs for pro bono attorneys representing children with special needs. The Justice Administrative Commission reports since 2014, the state would owe pro bono attorneys $27,006 in due process costs compared to the $3,537,216 it spent on appointed attorneys. For Bean, covering due process costs for pro bono lawyers would ultimately save the state money in what it spends on compensating lawyers.
We're going to be better off financially because of the little money we pay for court costs. We save the millions of dollars in hiring attorneys. So it is a solid win-win around.
The final measure going to Governor Rick Scott's desk is Senator Dana Young's Bill 568, which protects consumers from unsolicited telemarketing phone calls. The Federal Communications Commission reports that it received 155,282 consumer complaints about automated phone calls throughout 2017, some even violating the Do Not Call list. Young's measure expands the Florida Do Not Call Act by prohibiting unsolicited ringless voicemail messages by telemarketers. In addition to that, telephone sales calls must provide a consumer's caller ID with a telephone number capable of receiving calls and connecting consumers to the solicitor. Those that violate the Do Not Call Act will receive a fine up to $10,000. Young says this will send a strong message to telemarketers.
This bill is about protecting and respecting the privacy of Floridians who are needlessly harassed by unscrupulous telemarketers. We are saying by passing this bill that enough is enough. And if we say do not call, that means do not call.
Governor Rick Scott has 7 days to either sign off on each bill or strike them down entirely. If neither is done in that period, the bills will be made law without his signature. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ange Quintana.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Andrew Quintana and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.